ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Name 43. Dhata. Pita hamasya jagata. Mata dhata. Pita mahaha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he is the father of the universe, pita hamas of this universe, and he is the mother and the dhata. And the grandfather. So what does dhata mean? There's not datta, that's another word altogether. Data is means who gives. Dhata. Well, there are various meanings of this. That's why it's by considering the various meanings of these words we'll find. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, necessarily each word is translated just with one dhata. I believe Srila Prabhupada in translation translates as the support. I'm the father of this universe, the mother support, and the grandsire. So that's one meaning of the word dhata, the support. But there are so many other meanings also. And by considering these, then our consideration of Bhagavad Gita will be enriched. So I was saying yesterday it's a technical process, but it's not just something technical, just to fill up the minds of people who are inclined to speculate or ruminate or have philosophical predilections. But it's an activity of bhakti, study of Shastra, with the aim of understanding Krishna better. That is an act of bhakti. Understanding means how much can we understand, but still we try to. If we weren't meant to understand Krishna, Krishna would have never given us Shastra. All the Shastras are meant for understanding Krishna. Vede Ramayana Chaiva Purani Bharate Tata Adavante cha madhye cha hari sarvatra gyate. In all the Shastras, Vedas, Ramayana, Mahabharata, Puranas, everything. Beginning, middle and end, only Hari is glorified. Vedaischa sarvaraham eva vedyaha. In all the Vedas, Krishna is the object of knowledge. Sarve veda yat padama amananti. All the Vedas are meant for, or they all glorify Him. So, by trying to understand in more detail, then our appreciation of Krishna, that should be enhanced, is it not? Just like Srila Prabhupada said, it's not sufficient to say that God is great. We should know how He is great. Well, it's how great is He? We can go on trying to understand. There's no end to understanding how great He is. Jananta eva jananta kimbahu tyaname prabho manaso vapaso vacha vaibhavam tavagocharaha. Brahma, who He's the most intelligent and knowledgeable person in the universe, but He says that others may say that I know Krishna, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't know, either by mind or mental, either by the bodily activities, by mental activities, by speaking. It's your glories, He said to Krishna, beyond my powers of understanding. Still we have to try to understand. And that is an activity of bhakti. So, the meaning of dhata is given generally as the well, generally we understand this word as support. Dharan. The dharana means to have a concept. Dharan means to support. So that's one meaning, who supports and sustains. Another meaning is who creates. Another meaning, there are of course so many meanings, but primary meanings are being given here. Who has no support other than himself, which again gives the idea of self-sufficiency. He supports everything, but no one supports him. That's the meaning of being supreme. He is self-sufficient support of everything. Not that everything's all just the same. In this universe, we see everything's interlinked and everything is dependent upon everything else. No one or nothing in this universe is independent. Everything is dependent on everything else. But Krishna is truly independent because he doesn't need anything from anyone. Even spiritually, he's independent, but he becomes dependent upon the love of his devotees. But ontologically, or in his essence, he's completely independent. He supports everything, but there's no need, or there's nothing that supports him. Another meaning is he who drinks everything. So the drunkards can worship Krishna. They like to drink. Prabhupada said that, I remember. One devotee, this years ago in England, he was bewildered on hearing the recording of Srila Prabhupada say this, that even the drunkards, when they're drinking wine, if they simply think that the taste of this wine is Krishna, because they like the wine so much, if they think like that, one day they will become great devotees. So Krishna is the one who drinks everything. Of course, he's not a drunkard. Balaram, maybe, is drinking the Varuni, the honey drink, and appears to be intoxicated. But that intoxication is also worshipable. And another meaning, so there are five main meanings. The fifth meaning is he who is the antaryami, the indweller, or the supersoul of the four-faced Brahma. So this name Dhata, this comes up again, almost toward the end, name 951. So the creator of everything, including the four-faced Brahma. So this is very important, that Brahma is generally thought of as the creator of the universe. There are the Trimurti, or in Hindi, Teen Murti. Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Create, maintain, and destroy. But the creation by Brahma is also dependent upon Krishna. Even Vishnu, if we consider his difference from Krishna rather than his sameness, he's also doing everything. He's an expansion of Krishna. Shiva, he's destroying on the order of Krishna. So Brahma is known as the creator, but he's the creator something like an engineer. He doesn't provide the ingredients, but whatever ingredients are there, he puts them all together. But even the example of an engineer isn't wholly appropriate, because Krishna not only provides the ingredients for Brahma to create the universe, but he also gives the intelligence to Brahma how to do so. And the whole design is already, all the blueprints, everything's there, given by Krishna, not by Brahma. So Krishna is really the creator, and that name will carry on into the next name, Vidhata. So Brahma is, another thing is that Brahma creates, but then again there's destruction. Each day of Brahma he has to create the universe again. But there comes a time when Brahma also has to be destroyed. Koto chaturarana mori mori jautu. There's one saying of Vidyapati. How many Brahmas have come and gone? But Krishna, he remains. So in that sense, he's the real creator. The real creator is one who's not destroyed. Brahma himself is created, and he has to be destroyed in due course of time, the body of Brahma. But Krishna, he's behind the creation of so many Brahmas, so many universes, again and again. The universes enter into the body of Mahavishnu, bhutva bhutva praliyate, and again and again they come forth. So Krishna is the real creator. And although Brahma creates, ultimately everything is done by Krishna. So everything. If one thinks that I'm doing anything myself, if I think I am speaking here, and if anyone becomes overly fascinated by their own activities or abilities, they should know that prakrite kriyamana ni gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. One who thinks I am doing everything, when everything is being enacted by the three modes of material nature, such person is a great fool and an egoist, because we can't do anything without what is provided by Krishna, the ingredients of material energy, the intelligence, even the willpower to do anything. So everything, we have a minute independence. We should remember that word, minute. We're so much dependent. So Krishna is the creator of everything. And dhata also means the support, so that also means the maintainer of everything. Krishna creates everything. Everything that we see, that's a creation of Krishna. Devotees generally think like that. When they see anything, they think that this is created by Krishna. They don't think it's created by Brahma. He's an intermediary. Not that we disrespect Brahma. He's got a great post. But we understand that he also is simply working on the order of Krishna. That Tumi Sarveshwareshwara, that song is there of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Tomari Chai Brahma Srijan, what is that? Vishves Brahma Karena Srijan, Tomari Chai Brahma Karena Srijan. By your desire, Brahma creates the universe. So it's all going on by Krishna, that's the point. This Hinduism, in one sense it's good that they recognize that there are persons behind everything, but unless they recognize that ultimately it's all going on because of Krishna, and that all the demigods, they're all simply dependent upon and the order carriers of Krishna, then you end up with Hinduism instead of pure devotional service to Krishna, which is another, which may appear to people to be Hinduism, but it's a clear understanding of that which Hinduism confusedly purports to represent. That, yes, there are many gods. There's a God behind everything, even to open and close our eyes. There's a demigod, and there's who oversees that function. And to open and close the eyes, that requires certain life airs, which are all, there are 10 different kinds of life airs. There's that which we breathe, and that becomes transformed in the body. There's that when you belch that comes up. There's digestive air. There's that which carries the blood and other things, or makes things move within the body. There's that which forces the excrement out of the body. So like this, there are different life airs. They're all overseen by different demigods. And overseeing them all is Krishna. So, this verse again is quoted, Mama Yonya from Bhagavad Gita, Mama Yonya Mahad Brahma. Tasmin garbham dadhamyaham sambhava sarva bhutanam tato bhavati bharata. So, everything rests in Krishna. That's another meaning. Dhata. Everything rests in Krishna. Everything is supported by Krishna. And then as the creator, everything comes out from Krishna. So everything rests in him, and everything comes out from him. So in both ways, he's Dhata. He's the creator and the support of everything. So we say this, God creates everything. We say it as a kind of, God creates everything. But if we think just how powerful is the sun and the moon, and we generally don't have any idea how, we take it for granted how powerful is nature. Sometimes nature, Rudra, becomes manifest in nature, and then we have some idea of how powerful this material nature is. When there's a great storm, or a tsunami, or an earthquake, there's Rudra. The Rudra principle is in action. And we become astonished. We become awed. We become afraid. If you've ever been in any terrible storm where it's really powerful and trees are getting ripped up, and of course in Bengal there's that, just will be coming up soon, the Boishaki Jor, in which the banana trees get ripped up, but when real big heavy trees get ripped up and there's so much rain, or sometimes there are hailstones like as big as a cricket ball. So it's very dangerous. So if you're in that kind of storm, then you get some, or an earthquake, then this earth, you just take it for granted that all of, you're walking, but all of a sudden the earth becomes dangerous, and you've got nowhere to go, and you're just completely at the mercy of nature. Or if you're on a ship in the sea, and there's a heavy storm, and you just realize that the water is washing over the decks, and the ship goes right into the wave, and you don't know if it's going to come out or whether the ship's just going to go down. You're just completely at this big ship, you're completely at the mercy of the water. Then you get some idea of how powerful is this material nature. But that's just, then again, if we consider, of course, at that time, we don't consider so much philosophically. Later we can think about it. How this nature, we're just in one tiny little part of the earth where there's some great storm or whatever, earthquake. And it seems so powerful to us, but Ekang shena stito jagat. By the Krishna says, just by the with a tiny part of my potency, I create all the universes. And if we see just a little bit of that potency within a tiny part of the universe, we become so awed. So how great is Krishna? We should think. I had an experience once in Bangladesh, and I wrote about that in this Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life book. That we were on a boat crossing the river in the monsoon season, where the river's already very wide, and it becomes so wide, you can't see where it ends at all, because it floods the whole land, and there are treetops sticking up out of the water, and the tops of houses you can just see sticking over the water. So before we set off from the port, they were debating, should we go or not? Because they could see, it was the rainy season, rain can storms can come at any time, and they were thinking maybe it's dangerous, we shouldn't go, because we have to go to, it's a long journey to the other side. Anyway, they decided to go, and then after maybe an hour out, way out in the middle of this river, with no, you know, there's no shore anywhere for miles, because the whole river's over flooded, which is already spectacular itself, to see the river. You can't see the end of the river, you can't see either. It looks like the sea. It's so wide. And then the storm comes, and it's just, you know, the boats, is all, we're under the deck, but still so much water is coming in, and the boats rocking here and there, and we don't know, you know, we think that there's big waves, and we think the boat's going, just a little launch. So many times you'll hear in the news that the launch capsizes in Bangladesh and so many hundreds of people are drowned. So we're just there at the mercy of the waves and the wind and the rain. And one Muslim man was sitting just opposite me. I know, of course, they're mostly Muslims in Bangladesh, but he was a full beardwala. Long beard and dressed in his, well, I don't know what that dress is called. Anyway, there's many in Bangladesh still like that, full Muslim dress. So he turned to the person sitting next to him and with sparkling eyes, looking very happy, said, "Dekho, Allah Maya. Just see Allah's Maya." Which can mean illusion, and it all can also mean his energy, that this, because he's Muslim, but speaking Bengali, and that's derived from Sanskrit. So Maya also means his energy. Just see his energy. Just see his material energy. So we are supported by Krishna. We don't realize it. At any moment, I mean, apart from what are called natural catastrophes, we could die any time. We could slip and, you know, just fall down the stairs or something, or just break your head, or any time, any moment, anyone can die. Those who have asthma, as it's called in India, or asthma in English, they just can't breathe. They feel like they're just going to choke. I had this the first night I came here. Somehow my nostrils were completely blocked with mucus, and I felt I couldn't breathe. And just, we take it for granted, breathing. But it can just stop. What is that? Nishvaso naiva vishvaso kadarudho bhavishyati. We can't trust even our breath. At any moment can just stop. That's all. So many people, they're just, you know, walking around or eating their breakfast or whatever. All of a sudden, they have a heart attack. Finished. So Krishna, the support, the maintainer. But then there comes a time when he turns over to Rudra. Okay, now it's time to destroy. The body we have, we are maintained. Krishna maintains, he supports, but any time, and that time will come, when the body won't last anymore. But Krishna says, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. Write this down, make this point. The body of a devotee, that will also pass away. Krishna consciousness is meant for conquering death. How do you say conquer? The devotees also die. But they are not destroyed in the way that a materialistic person dies, but a devotee doesn't die. One thing is, materialistic people, they're already dead anyway. Because then, if you're not in Krishna consciousness, then you're just, practically you're dead anyway. Your consciousness is, you're cut off from life, which is Krishna. So when you die, anyway you're dead. You're just going to another. A new birth means another phase of deathly existence. But a devotee is always alive, and he doesn't die as such. He just, Krishna takes into him. That's all. So a devotee is never destroyed. A devotee is always supported by Krishna. I'm extrapolating a bit here. These are not exactly the meanings given by these commentators who are all great Vaishnavas. Where are we going here? Yeah, so creation, maintenance, destruction. He is the cause of all of that. So in that way, he's the creator also. He's the creator of everything that is later maintained and destroyed. So there are some of the meanings of the word dhata. Dhata. Then another similar word. Did I get all those? Yeah, he who drinks. He who drinks everything. That means, just as like he's, at the time of the universal destruction, he sucks everything into his body. So in that way. He dhata, one who drinks. Then, vidhata. So this prefix, vi, that means, generally means special. It can mean without. There are various meanings of it, but it generally means special. This word, vidhata, is a well-known word. Right? You all know the word vidhata. South Indian languages also, vidhata. Means he who ordains fate, who gives out the destiny. So, vidhata, this name, the dispenser of the fruits of action and the inducer of action. So providence, fate, kismet. That's the usual word used, isn't it? Should be bhagya, but somehow they prefer the word kismet, some Urdu word. So, who is the director, the controller, the regulator? He sees that everything is going on as it should. We've heard of supercomputers, but what kind of supercomputer can regulate and integrate all the karmic reactions of every living being? Right? So when you consider unlimited living beings, I think that Microsoft would be stumped on. I mean, they can't even get a decent operating system together, let alone doing, you know, trying to coordinate all the different karmas of the living beings, because it's all interactive. It's just like Hitler was a demon. Churchill was also a demon, maybe more than Hitler, as Prabhupada said, but Churchill's side won the war, so they write the history books. So Churchill doesn't come off as a demon, whereas Hitler does, which he definitely was also. Stalin also. Why should we underestimate the Russians? We have a Russian here. Of course he's a devotee, but Stalin was also no less a demon. He killed far more Russian, far more Soviet citizens than Hitler did. His own people, supposed to be. So these people are demons. They orchestrated the killing of hundreds and thousands of millions of people. But in one sense, the people who got killed also deserved it, because it was their fate from their sinful activities to be under such a person. Now, it doesn't mean that because of that, Stalin is absolved from guilt, but because he had some perverse desire to do that, he got the opportunity to do that, but he also has to suffer the sinful reactions for that. So how people are put there, people with certain desires are put in certain situations where they can perform very sinful activities. And the persons who suffer from that, they're put in that situation, just like people with a similar karmic fate to die in the same way, they all get put in a plane with the crashes. That's the Shastric understanding. People of a similar outlook and disposition, they get born in the same country, or in the same community. Actually, in India previously, there wasn't much thought of, like, we are Indian, or even we are Tamil, or Karnataka, or whatever. There was no such thing. It was more like your caste, that was your jati. That was the main thing. And your family, that was which people identified with most of all. So, and we see that in India, even today, it's getting broken down more and more with modern life, but it's a different kind of consciousness and culture. People born in Brahmin families, Vaishya families, there aren't any real Kshatriyas left. Shudra families, or you can say, just like Italian people in general, we can say Italian people are very different to Swedish people. Or Bengalis are very different to Gujaratis in many ways. And generally speaking, we can say like that. So people get put in certain situations with other people of a similar outlook and mentality. That's how we understand it. And a similar karmic background. It may be that someone, we find that in the story of Chitraketu, someone who is the enemy of that person in a previous life, he gets born as the son of that person. And that's there also in the story of King Vena. That Vena gave so much grief to his father by being such a demon, whereas his father Anga, I believe his name, he was greatly distressed at having such a sinful son. And in the case of Chitraketu, his son, the father is very affectionate to his baby child, and then the baby child died. And in this way, he gave great grief to Chitraketu. So it may be that someone is the enemy in a previous life, gets born as their son, and then dies just so that that person can suffer the pain of grief like that. So it's extremely complex. And we see all the liver, some lizard, you don't see any lizard here. Generally at this time they crawl around the light switches and then they catch the insects which are... So what karmic fate was it that some jiva is in the body of some little moth going around the light switch and then the lizard gobbles him up? Or the snake comes to catch the frogs. And all the frogs, they see him coming, and they all jump in the pond. Once I was staying on some farm, and there was a little pond, which all the frogs, they'd sit at the edge, and the snake would come. And then all the frogs would see, and they'd all jump in the pond, and then the snake would stop slithering and just sit there disappointed. And one time the snake would catch the frog. So what is that? That this out of there, the karmas that they have acquired, they get a certain type of body. This daivane, what is that? Karmana daivane trena jantur deho papateye. Under the supervision of the Supreme Lord, according to one's karmic reactions, one gets a certain type of body. So it's all interlinked. That jiva in the body of a frog. What do you have to do to become a frog? What kind of sinful activities? And then that frog gets eaten by a snake. And again, you have to be very envious to become a snake. So, or sometimes the frog will escape, and sometimes the snake will catch it. So, vidhata, he's overseeing this, what has to happen. So that's this understanding is a very deeply in Indian culture, which I see the Muslims have also. This idea of kismet, it's very deep, which we don't find so much in the West, because in the West people think, I'm a self-made man, I'm doing everything by myself. I don't rely on anyone. This idea is that. Or they don't have any philosophical background whatsoever. Whereas in India, that understanding that in other countries also, Thailand, where there's the understanding that we get birth after birth after birth, and what happens to us is because of something that we did in a previous birth or in this life. Sometimes we get reactions very quickly. Someone, they do something wrong, and then something bad happens to them, and then say, now I'm getting my reaction. Parikshit Maharaj, after insulting Shamika Rishi, he thought, now I should get some bad reaction. So let it come. So that understanding is there, and it makes, it gives a whole completely different perspective to how people view the world and how they live in this world. Just soldiers who come back from duty in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they've seen so many bad things, and even if they get back with all their limbs intact, they suffer from trauma from having seen so many bad things and probably killed quite a few people themselves. And if they lose a hand or something, then they can't understand, they can't come to, it's very difficult for them to come to grips with the fact that they're not going to have a hand for the rest of their existence, because they think their existence begins with the birth of the body and ends with the death of it. Whereas I read something about this, about the traumas that the soldiers are going through in after doing tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. So I asked one devotee, Anupam Vallabh in Baroda, who is an ex-army man, and he'd been in Operation Blue Star, which, if you remember, was the, maybe that was before some of you were born, the Indira Gandhi had the Indian Army. You're from Punjab, right? They know about it very well up there. They're still talking about it. How the Bindravanali, I think that was his name?
He was Bindrava.
Yeah. Bindrava. He was the head of the insurgency. They used to call it terrorism, now they call it insurgency, because if you call them terrorists, they come and kill the journalists. So you call them militants or insurgents. So he was the head of that, and they were all holed up in the Golden Temple, and they thought they were safe there because no one would dare to come and touch them in such the holiest place in the whole of Sikhism. And Punjab, the state of Punjab in India, of course most of Punjab is now in Pakistan, but that's like, it's dominated by Sikhs. Although I think the population is only half, 50% Sikh, isn't it? 50% Hindu, something like that. Majority Sikh?
Majority Sikh.
Majority Sikh. Okay. But in the villages, it's majority Sikhs. Okay, all right. So anyway, Indira Gandhi thought she'd had enough of all this, and she sent in the army, and they just smashed the whole Golden Temple to pieces and killed every Sikh and whatever living entity may have been, and they just, you know, smashed everything and everyone to pieces. So it was a, you know, it was a nasty kind of operation in which they, and that what was his name? Gill? He was given he said, you don't ask any questions, I'll finish off this terrorism. So he just went in and just killed them all. No questions, no trial. He just found all the, whatever terrorist was there, he just went and killed them all. So it was a nasty job, you could say. And there's a lot of killing and, you know, just no questions asked, just shoot them or blow them up. But so anyway, this was my question to Anupam Vallabh. I see so many ex-army men, and they've seen plenty of action, and they've, you know, they've killed people, and they've had their friends killed next to them. But I don't, you know, they're just like normal people. And they're not like affected mentally by it. I suspected there's a different outlook on life. And that's exactly what he said. Yeah, I said, why is it? Because the Western soldiers, they get completely affected. He said, yeah, it's a different outlook on life. He said, because we believe in God. Now, many Western people believe in God, well, less and less day by day. But even if they believe in God, because they have the idea that God is supposed to make everything nice for me, and if they get their hand blown off, or they see so much suffering in the world, it affects their faith in God. Whereas for someone who knows that everyone is simply getting the result of their previous activities, then it's not that they will be totally unaffected by all of this, but they know that, all right, you know, my hand got blown off. Okay, let's go on with life. They're not so. In the Western world, if someone's a spastic, physically handicapped, physically challenged, otherwise able, or different abilityed person, these are all the different terms they've used. It was originally called spastic. They're like, people are very, I'm so sorry, and, you know, they have a lot of sympathy for, but whereas, I see in India, people, they just say, all right, someone's like that, okay. And the person themselves, they just go on with life. They're just, it's not, It's not a big thing. All right, I did something in my previous life. I'm like this. They're not mental about it. So understanding that we are, the kind of situation we are in is due to the activities that we have performed. It makes a very big difference. And to understand that there is a person behind all of that, and that is Krishna, that also makes a lot of difference. And the thing, the Muslims, they also, of course, most people are not philosophical, but they have this idea also. I don't know if it's in Islam. It won't be the idea of reincarnation, but you can see how that, what you could call the Hindu way of thinking has affected the Muslims in India also, because, you know, that very word, kismat, is, you know, it's an Urdu word. It's a Muslim word, if you like. So they very much have this concept also. It's as much there among the Muslims as it is among the Hindus, isn't it? What do you think? And the Sikhs, everyone. So it's a very important understanding for living in this world. It completely changes our whole way of seeing the world. And also if we understand that death, like, it's not the end, it's just another change. It's just another phase of existence. So, you know, people don't get all upset when they have to die, and they're getting old and they're dying, and they're just, all right. I've died so many times, I'm going to die again. Like that. Gokulchandra told me once, he went to the burning hut in Varanasi, just to see what's going on there. And there was one Bengali there, and he asked Gokul and whoever was with him, that, oh, where are you from? He said, that's my mother. He pointed to one fire. She was a great devotee. She was a great Vaishnava. She was always chanting. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't lamenting or anything. He said, and he indicated like this, she's gone up, like that. Not that, oh, my mother has passed away. She's quite content. And my mother, she's lived a good life. She's gone on. And that's all. We'll go on with life. That's all. So this understanding, but that is complete by understanding who is behind all of this. Like in Buddhism, they also have the understanding that there's repeated birth and death, but they don't accept that there is a regulator of all of this. Oops, I have to regulate the time also. I don't regulate it, but I have to stick within the regulations of the time. So there are so many things to say about Vidhata. The first interpretation is given is, he who especially protected the seed he sowed for Brahma till the seed fully developed into the creation of Chaturmukh Brahma. So that's explained how Brahma, he's the dhata behind the dhata. If Brahma is considered the creator, then Brahma, he was born from the lotus, but the seed from which Brahma developed, that was protected by Krishna until it eventually sprouted and became Brahma. So he's the protector in that sense. That's a very specific sense. The Brahmanda, all the ingredients were all put there, and when that was protected, and when Brahma was ready, then he created it. But in the meantime, it was protected by Krishna. Vidhata means that he bestows the fruits on everyone for everyone, even for Brahma, even for Yama. Yama gives the fruits of activities to everyone. People come to him. Okay, you go to heaven, you go to hell. The Vaishnavas don't go to Yamaraj at all. But who is doing it for Yama? Krishna. He oversees what is required. Of course, Yamaraj is a great devotee. Vidhata means, dhata means support. So he is the support of all supports. The support of the universe is Adishesha. But the support of him is Krishna. Now, generally we think Vishnu, he's resting on Anantashesha. But even the ability of Ananta to support Vishnu, that ability is given to him by Vishnu. He doesn't have any independent ability. So that's the point being made there. Now, he who makes the rules, not who makes the laws of the universe, of course, we say make, but they're always existing. And the laws of the universe, the modern scientists are speculating that there may be unlimited universes with all different laws of physics in different universes. But from Shastra we understand that it's basically the same thing in different universes. Not that they all have different laws of physics or any such thing. So, he dispenses the fruits of action, but the very system by which for certain activities you get certain results, that again is set up, it's coming from him. Now, again, Vidhata can mean who protects the beings of this world in various ways. Here meaning various. So, again, it's just a slight difference from the word dhata, just to explain it a bit more. Now, in relation to the devotees, he bestows the fruits of activities upon the non-devotees, but devotees, they don't have karmic activities, but they do get a result also. So the desire of his devotees is to serve Krishna, to taste the sweetness of Krishna. So Krishna also fulfills their desires. So in that way, he's Vidhata. There's another meaning that he is born by Garuda. Here, Vit means Garuda, and Dhata means support. So who Garuda supports, who he carries, that also means Vidhata. So there are many explanations of how this name Vidhata is derived. Vidhatri means one who makes, creates, grants, gives, bestows. Vidhanam, arranging, disposing. Vidhana. Do you say that? In Hindi, it's not a very common word. Vidhan. Then another meaning of Vidhanam is a rule. Yeah. That's similar to Vidhi. So Vidhana means arrangement. It also means a rule. Particularly a sacred rule. Not so much a secular rule. Of course, in Vedic culture, there's no difference, but in modern world, there is. Maybe it's good to call the rules of the state, instead of calling them the niyam of the state, to call it, there's other word, again, Urdu, Ayn Kanun. You say that? Yeah. That's in So that means like the rules of the government, but vidhi means the rules of Shastra given by God. And then vidhata, who is the vidhanasya karta, who makes the rules work. You can make so many rules, but unless there's enforcement, the rules are useless. Just like in our ISKCON, there are so many rules, but people can follow or not follow. There's no one to... Of course, if you do something really wrong, they might kick you out or something like that. But there's no police force as such. Or if there's no one to enforce the rules, then the rules have no meaning. So who enforces the meaning of the rules, that also means vidhata. So in the state, we can get away with breaking the rules of the state, but if we cannot get away with breaking the rules of God. Just like you may be a criminal and you can go to the grave without being caught. You murdered so many people and you stole so many things and somehow the police didn't apprehend you. Or you paid them off or whatever. In India, you can do that. Less and less so. Increasingly, they're catching people and sticking them in prison. The bribes don't work anymore so much as they used to. So by bribery or whatever, you can get away with it. But you can't get away from the laws of God. There's a saying in Bengali, Prabhupada used to say that Gaye gu makile jom chare bena. Can you understand that? Have you heard that? You ever heard anyone say that? No? Well, I never heard anyone. There are many Bengali sayings I only heard from Prabhupada. I never heard Bengali say. Gaye gu. If you rub stool all over your body, then Yamaraj, he will come and look at you and say, phew, and then go away. He'll take you anyway. You can't escape. You can't escape. You can escape the laws of the state, maybe. But you can't escape the laws of God because he doesn't just make the rules, but he enforces them also. And it may take some time, but just like there's a saying, the wheels, what is it? The wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind. You want to look it up on the internet? I can't remember what it is, but they grind surely. I can't remember exactly the saying. The wheels of justice may grind slowly, but they grind something. I lost the last word. Now you can look up anything, anytime, anywhere, theoretically. They show the advertisements with someone sitting on top of a mountain on the internet, but it doesn't work. And even in Bangalore, it doesn't work half the time. So, the wheels of justice may grind slowly, but they grind fine. Who's that saying attributed to? So, Creator, a little over time. I'll finish this one. Creator. Yeah, there are other meanings also, but that will be discussed later. When the name again comes. Even Namdhata refers to Bhagavan creating the seed. Yeah, when I said seed, that means the universe, the universe in seed form, not Brahma in seed form. I mistook that. Let's see, have a quick look through this. Alde Vidyabhushan has the same interpretation as that of Bhatta. Parasha Bharta. I was just talking about Vidhata and fate and tsunamis. And guess what? In the paper came fear of tsunami. There's an earthquake in Bangalore?
Yes.
A tremor. I didn't feel it. What time was it? What time?
Afternoon,
2:30. 2:30. I didn't notice it at all. Must have been very mild. I was in an earth tremor in, that was the Latur earthquake. I was in Iskon Juhu at the time. I was bathing in the morning and I thought that myself I'd gone giddy. And then after the Mangal Arati, Siddharth Prabhu, who's now got some sannyasi name, said, I think I offered the Mangal Arati. And he was the head pujari. He said, "Oh, so you, earthquake." I just thought it was me. There's another time I was in Bangkok, in a wooden house, and the house just all started shaking. It was an earth tremor, but I didn't notice anything. So I wanted to speak about that. It's like tsunami doesn't happen very often. Earthquakes don't happen very often. But yeah, things like that can happen just suddenly. And people, they tend to think that the world, just the way it is the way it is. And it will always be like that. And then something happens to really shake them up. No one ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. Ha ha ha. So, yeah, just like a godbrother sent me an email, he remembers from his childhood. That was 1968. I remember I must have been 11 years old. It was a very big thing in the Western world. It came in the newspapers that Russia, the USSR, invaded Czechoslovakia. So he was, it's the old people. So he was living in Prague, and he remembers that all of a sudden there were Soviet tanks everywhere, and their country had been taken over or invaded by the USSR. So they were thinking that, you know, everything's great, everything's going on nice, our country is getting all liberal, and we're getting away from all this communism. And all of a sudden, I guess it must have been Comrade Leonid decided that was enough is enough, and send in some tanks. And they guessed they could get away with it, that NATO wouldn't do anything, which was correct. They didn't. NATO didn't love Czechoslovakia that much that they were going to risk a world war over it. In Hungary also before that, yeah. But the 1956 or something like that, they invaded Hungary. So he made the point that he'd experienced that in his childhood. Now all of a sudden, everything's all nice and wonderful and everyone's happy, and all of a sudden you've got Russian boots all over you. So like that tsunami, all of a sudden you join the fish, except you can't swim like them. So things happen so suddenly. But that brings up a thought of another name of, well, one name that we've already discussed in Vishnu Sahasranama is Tanu. And there's another name which has a very similar meaning, which is yet to be discussed by my lowly self, is Dhruva, which means fixed or steady. So in this world, now, it's very good for us to hear this regularly. In this world, nothing is fixed, nothing is steady. We can't trust anything or rely on anything. Anything can happen anytime, because that's a fact. And because of Maya, we tend to think that the way things are, the way things always will be, more or less. But suddenly there can be drastic and dramatic changes which just change everything in our world. Among the many things that I read in my life in newspapers, I must admit, I remember reading some years ago how a woman at home in somewhere in South India, she was ironing the clothes for the children in the morning when she was electrocuted and died. So it just struck me. It must have been just like any normal morning. The mother is up and saying, come on, put your clothes on quickly, and cooking something and giving it to them. She's ironing the clothes. All of a sudden she's dead. And just the world of the family completely changes. Unimagined. The mother who's always there every morning feeding them and clothing them and getting on their case, come on, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, and then sends them off with the tiffin to school, all of a sudden, gone, with no chance of coming back. So what a shock. But that is the nature of the material world. Anything can happen at any time, which just completely changes our situation. And death will come for each of us also. And that will completely change our situation. Do not ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for you. There's some saying from some old Latin poem which Ernest Hemingway named a book after. That it comes in his poem, because the ding, 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 still in the Christian churches, when someone dies, they ring the bell, ding, 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 ding. So, the bell is ringing, and someone asks someone else, who is the bell ringing for? Who died? And they don't ask, it's for you. Your time will come. So, one name of Krishna, Dhruva, or Sthanu, they both mean fixed. They don't change. Or even people's attitudes may change. There are many instances in the world of people people have very good friends, and then they become enemies. The same people, but their attitudes completely change. Or something else from the newspaper. What is that? One Pakistani in Britain won the Pakistani immigrant in Britain, or son of a Pakistani immigrant, won the lottery. So he got £1 million or something, which to most people seems like a lot of money, but you can just fritter it away very quickly. And although it was understood in the family, because they're Pakistani family, they still some family culture is there. The understanding that what any of us gets is for all of us. So they're all very happy he won the $1 million, but he just cut £1 million or whatever it was, but he just cut himself off from the family and said, no, the money's for me, not for you. So it was a source of distress for them. They lost their son, and they lost their family unit, and just for the money. He thought the money. I love the money more than I love my family, who had done everything for him up to that point. There are many cases of that. The wife. There's some other case, some other time. She got the ticket, and then she decided, okay, I got the money, I don't need my husband anymore, and like this. So, situations can change drastically. People can change. But Krishna won't change. Krishna is that person who we can always rely on, whatever else happens in this world. Now, psychologists, they may call this a psychological crutch, that you just believe in some God who isn't really there, but you just believe it because you hope that there's something out there which is going to help you. But devotees experience that, and well, you can call it a psychological crutch if you like, but we will chant Hare Krishna and keep our faith in Krishna. There's a Draupadi said, that's in the Nectar of Devotion. You want to look that up, see if you can find that? I meant to look it up, but then I got diverted into something else. She said that if you look up Draupadi and Moon Wildcard, asterisk. She said that the rays of the sun may become cold, and the rays of the moon may become warm, but Krishna, your protection, that will never change. In other words, the sun will never become cold, and the moon will never become hot. It's impossible. But even theoretically, even if such an unimagined event were to happen, but still, Krishna, he's not going to change. Did you get that? It's in the Nectar of Devotion. It's a very nice quote. No. Anyway, that's the purpose. Krishna, you will never change. So that's one name of Krishna. Then, Asthanu or Dhruva. Then, name 45. Dhatur Uttamaha. So Dhatu means an ingredient of, just like the elements of this world, and Uttama means above or the best of. Did you find that? Oh. Anyway, we got past that point though. Above or the best of. So, Krishna is above the material energy. Ishvarang Prakriti Param, Kunti Devi says. You are the supreme controller, superior to this material energy. Or, sometimes in the theistic Sankhya, the analysis of this material world, the elements are listed, not exactly in terms of the physical elements, but what are the constituents of this world? So it's, well, they are there also. The five gross elements, the three subtle elements, the senses, the objects of the senses in generic form, that means the Rupa, Rasa, Sparsha, Gandha, Shabda, the form, taste, smell, form, rasa means that which is to be smelled, that which is to be tasted, that which is to be touched. So rupa goes with darshan, with seeing. So there's the act of seeing, the act of tasting, the act of smelling, the act of feeling, the act of hearing. And then there are the objects of these. And then there are the different philosophers give different lists, and there are three modes of material nature. And then in some lists there is also the Atma, and in some the Paramatma also. Although the Paramatma is not really part of this world, but sometimes in the list of ingredients of this world, Paramatma is also included because nothing works without him, as is described in Purusha Sukta, that and in the second canto of Bhagavatam, how all the ingredients of the world were placed there, and all the demigods overseeing everything. Everything was there, but until Purusha, the Paramatma, entered, then everything came to life. So in this way, Krishna can be considered Dhaturutamaha. He's above all the elements, and at the same time, or if you want to see him, he is the essential, or the topmost, or the principal element, although he's in a different category altogether from everything else. He is the ultimate constituent of everything. So there's also, because Brahma is also called Dhatri. He's also, this name Vidhata often refers to Lord Brahma. So Dhata also means Brahma, but so Dhaturutama, Dhaturutama, Brahma, Dhatri, from the same root as Dhata, the same root from which the name Dhata is extracted. So this also means that Uttama, he is superior. He is the supreme Dhat. If we consider that others are also, Brahma, he also holds up this world in one sense as the creator of this world. But superior to him is Krishna, Vishnu. So that's an analysis of the name Dhataruttamaha. Hare Krishna. Any question? Comment? We don't expect protests. We're not saying anything provocative here. People will like this kind of lecture. There's no hogs, dogs, nonsense, animals, or well, they may not like it because there's no nectar. There's no gopis, but at least they feel some relief. Ah, no hogs, dogs, camels, or asses this time. Yeah.
It's like if any thief kills some other person.
If a thief kills another person, yeah.
Means that person who's killed is suffering.
The person who's killed had that, there's a saying, he had it coming to him. Even in English there's a saying like that. He had it coming to him. He had it coming to him, that kind of gives the idea that he deserved, there's a vidhata, there's someone up there who's giving you what you deserve, yeah.
But why that thief seems like this, he's only an instrument in killing that person.
He's only an instrument. Yeah, but it's a sinful desire. It's a sinful desire to kill someone. He, by vidhata, by the overseer, he's given the opportunity to do that. But it's still a sinful desire. The person who got killed, they deserved it. But the person who did it, he didn't have any right to do that. You can't say, well, I killed him, he did. It was just his karma. But you did something illegal. Krishna, that's what I'm saying, he coordinates all the desires and the karmic reactions of all different living beings. So someone has a sinful desire, Krishna allows them to fulfill that. Sinful desire means that they're doing some harm to someone. So Krishna allows them to fulfill that. He gives the someone who deserves to get that. Otherwise, if you say everyone's just an instrument, then there's no karma anyway, because there's no sinful activity. So it's all very complex. Karma no hi api bodhavyam. What is that? Karma no hi api bodhavyam. Akarmana What is that? Karma yavi bodhavyam. Bodhavyam api karmanaha. Akamanascha bodhavyam gahana karmano gatihi. Krishna says it's very difficult to understand all this. How, what is karma, akarma, vikarma? It's very, even for people who are very intelligent and that, it's very difficult to understand how it's all very, very complex. The basic principles can be understood, but exactly how it's working, it's just too complex for our minds to understand. Therefore we understand Krishna, yeah. He's the one who's holding it all together. Yeah. Oh, Anadi Krishna, yeah. He was with me for some time long ago, maybe 20 years, typing this Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. He typed up most of that. He not typed it, only he transcribed it from tapes with these old tape recorders, and cassette recorders. He's there now, online? Oh, okay. Very nice. Anadi Nidhanam. That was just discussed. So, Hare Krishna to Anadi Krishna, Prabhu. Out in the hills of North Carolina, chanting Hare Krishna.
Does Krishna change karma of only unalloyed devotees?
Does Krishna change the karma of only of unalloyed devotees? No, even neophyte devotees. Srila Prabhupada often said, quoting from Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, which is again quoting from some other shastra, that if you just clap your hand three times in the arati, then all these birds, it's just all these sinful reactions go away. Just like if you clap your hands underneath the tree, all the birds in the tree will fly away. So it's not only for fully pure devotees, but any act of bhakti just changes one, the course, the whole course of one's life. Bhakti is so powerful. Nevertheless, to attain Krishna, one has to have fully pure devotee, fully pure devotion. What is that? Tvananyaya bhaktya. Only by pure devotional service is Krishna attained. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada, he changed the course of our lives, didn't he? Otherwise, what worm in stool I would have been. And so many others also. Therefore, devotees are so grateful to Prabhupada because he really saved us from hellish existence. People think in the Western world everything's so nice, but people are suffering much more than in India. You can perceive it when you come back to India from the West. And when you come back, it means in some big city like Bombay or Delhi, which is not really, or Bangalore, I don't really think this is India at all. When I think of India, I don't think of these big cities. I think of the small towns and the villages. And these cities, they're so westernized. But even coming into a big city like Bombay or Delhi after being in the West, especially being in the West for a month or two, it's such a difference, isn't it? You just relax because the people in the West are just suffering so much. Where did you go to? Croatia? Where else? Slovenia? And Turkey. Yeah, but that's not really the West. I mean, if you go from Croatia to onto Germany, and then you see... I remember once I went overland. I was in St. Petersburg, I was in Tatarstan, and then I went west to St. Petersburg. And you can see the difference. People in Tatarstan, they're much more simple than in St. Petersburg. And then from there I went to Lithuania. This is quite a few years ago. And already Lithuania, they're closer to the Western Europe. From there I went to Poland, and then you could see, it's like going west, you could see people getting more materialistic and more degraded. Not that much difference between Petersburg and Lithuania. But then you go to Poland, to Warsaw, Warszawa, and then it's definitely people are more materialistic. And then I went to Berlin. Berlin, what a pits of a place. I mean, people are so degraded. I mean, it's like they're really trying their best to be as degraded as possible. Two cities, Berlin and Amsterdam. These two places, people, they're like, really? I don't think in Amsterdam they're trying to be degraded. They're just so used to it now. Maybe that in the 1960s they started trying to be degraded. They really did a good job of being very, just extremely gross and materialistic and fallen. So yeah, when you come back to India, you see the difference actually. So what was the point I was making there? I lost it. Prabhupada saved us, yeah. Prabhupada really saved us. In Amsterdam, Prabhupada was they had some program in a park, and he said, there's no use to say anything to these people. Just chant Hare Krishna and give them prasadam. They're so fallen. All the hippies, and they're all intoxicated and naked, and there's no use to speak to such people. Can't say anything to them. They're just so fallen. So Prabhupada saved us, and we really should appreciate that. What he saved us from. I mean, it's not that people are like, most people are not deliberately trying to be bad. It's just that the culture is so godless and remote from Vedic culture and influenced by Kali Yuga. Hare Krishna.